Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very accomplished professional, a former Army officer from Canada, Mr. Steve Nash, or Lieutenant Colonel Steve Nash.
Steve, thanks so much. Welcome to the show. Thank you. And I'm very happy to be here. And I was really enjoying our pre-discussion as well. So I expect that this will go at least as well as that.
Absolutely. Steve is the founder of Traditional Excellence Human Performance. As I mentioned, he's a retired lieutenant colonel. He spent 25 years in the Canadian military. He's presently undertaking a Doctor of Education program with the Arizona State University, focused on leadership and innovation. And he's an 8th degree black belt in Shotokan Karate. So Steve, before we talk leadership, tell me a little bit about your own journey from the Army to becoming an entrepreneur.
Excellent, thank you. Yes, so I was lucky enough to spend 25 years in the Canadian military as an infantry officer, and I was lucky enough to be a paratrooper for a long time and then work in our special operations community. But for all kinds of good reasons, I was medically released at the 25-year point. I didn't have the choice anymore of continuing service. So from there, when I went back out into the world, maybe I'd call it the real world, I found that I had to re-educate and retool myself to realign some of the things that I think I knew to better serve society in general. So I went back to school to get a bachelor and master's of education. I worked for almost 9 years with a social welfare agency, specifically as a youth outreach worker. And then I also tried to start to reach out and to change my network to connect with people who did good things, to connect with important ideas and to share those. And part of me likes to think of it that I'm just continuing my service to society, being out of the military.
Wonderful. And, you know, let's talk leadership. And I think the Army trains some amazing leaders. Let me start by asking you, what is the kind of work you are doing with leaders?
Yes, excellent. So I do many different things with many types of leaders because I'm by personality, I'm a humanist. So I tend to believe that when I see things occurring or not occurring, when I see challenges in society, I tend to ask myself, what is happening with the people? Who are the people that have more influence? How are they interacting with each other or not interacting? So some of the work groups I work with now in the province of Ontario, one of the components of Canada where I live, I've run the leadership program for all the tactical police forces since 2005. So it's a 5-day package, which is probably 60 to 90 hours for that week. So it's pretty intense. And although we do some physical activities and other things you might expect, we really use experiential learning and interactive discussion to talk about what leadership and team dynamic are and how we develop them to maximize our potential for success. At the same time, I mentor individuals and other groups. I teach at colleges, as I mentioned, and I merely, because I'm a people person, a humanist by perspective, I tend to look for opportunities to cross paths with people. Because I'm also a believer that with the right people correctly guided, almost nothing is impossible.
Correct.
But with the wrong people and the wrong guidance, maybe the easiest, the simplest thing becomes nearly impossible. And I'm lucky that I've generally had the ability to be purposely selective since my retirement, because I actually have a view. I don't want to train the wrong group. I don't want to train. I don't want to enable criminals. I don't want to enable people who would hurt others purposely. I want to try to contribute to develop, you know, my company is about human performance, how to elevate individuals and teams.
Fascinating. My next question, and I'm sure you've been asked this many, many times, what makes a good leader?
Well, yes. I think I've thought about this for a long time, like you, and talked to many people and tried to sort of craft my my own personal viewpoint that that can touch many points. And I think, first of all, many people tend to talk about leadership in the same way they talk about being a boss.
Correct.
Or the way they talk about being a manager or an administrator. In a military, we tend to use the word command.
Mm-hmm.
And I would merely suggest that although those words are related to leadership, they actually, to me, they look at a different piece.
Correct.
So, for example, for me, leadership is the focus around human-to-human engagement.
Mm-hmm.
And emotional trust relationships that are subjective.
Mm-hmm.
So it connects a need from the follower
mm-hmm.
to what they believe that the leader provides for them or can provide.
Right.
So, and the subjective nature is important to me. Mm-hmm. And I would, maybe I'll use the term, it's a bit of magic in that we can see it, it's occurring, but it's hard to objectively quantify how to get it. And it's some of the work that I'm doing in my doctoral research
mm-hmm.
is how do we objectively quantify something that might be subjective?
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, one of my colleagues in my program is a high-end professional performer, like dance, song, music.
Mm-hmm.
And in talking with them, I think that leadership might be a performative art, as in, as if you were in the audience and you're affected by someone else's engagement.
Mm.
And so connected with that, we have command, which is being a boss, a supervisor, which relates to having authorities, accountabilities, and responsibilities to largely make decisions, set priorities, and direct others, which is related to leadership, but I think it's more objective because it's part of an organizational structure and rules.
Mm-hmm.
Well said. And then the last related concept there would be management, the allocation of resources in time and space.
Mm.
And you know, from your accomplished background, we continually try to use these different aspects. But to me, if you're going to talk about leadership, we're talking about the emotional human-to-human connection, which is quite special, can be fleeting, and can be difficult to replicate depending on the needs, desires, and expectation of the followers.
Mm, well said. And you just spoke about how in the army you have command and control, and yet there are some amazing leaders that come out of the army. So my question to you is, what leadership lessons from the army do you bring to your corporate clients?
Oh, no, thank you. Yes, the first part is that idea of engaging, being a boss, a commander, because that's a lawful set of authorities, and it can bear a heavy weight. But to blend that with actually engaging with people, actually caring about them. And, in education, we talk about, a common theme is people don't care what you know until they know that you care.
Mm.
So commanders can command and make decisions and order people to do things. That is one powerful concept
mm-hmm.
upheld by a state law and bounded, by the threat of court martial, et cetera.
Mm.
But on the human side, leadership inspires and pulls. So I guess I would suggest that while telling someone what to do is coercive and a push, leadership to me is an invitational, inspirational pull.
Mm.
So I can tell someone to go and do something, and maybe they will have to comply by lawful command.
Mm.
But I could also inspire them and say, come with me, or we can do this thing together.
Mm.
Right. And then it's a very powerful approach. So now you have two compelling components, and a compulsion is not necessarily good or bad. It's just a method to influence others toward group success, organizational success, maybe even success of society or human beings at large.
Mm.
And the other thing I'd add is militaries, in my experience, tend to believe that leadership is trainable, and I believe part of that. I think that some people are more adept at, for example, charismatic leadership. It's a personality trait or something that they can exhibit.
Correct.
But I also believe that every leader can be developed and get better, not only in formal training, but also in practice, just doing it again and again and again. And in fact, making mistakes to learn how to better engage with others.
Mm, well said. Great response. Thank you. So my next question, Steve, is that, the world is just coming out of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I've spoken to many leaders, and they've often said to me that this is probably the most difficult time of their lives because they had to keep their flock together. They had to make sure that bottom lines are met, the shareholders are happy. So my question to you is that what are the characteristics of leadership in the age of uncertainty?
Yeah, and I think really, really interesting question. And I think that the world, things are always evolving and on the move.
Mm.
And in a military, coined from the US military, we have the idea of VUCA, right? Volatility, mm-hmm. uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity.
Correct.
By chance, fortunately for me, that's more of my personality. I'm a destabilizer. I'm a disruptor by personality, and I enjoy the upside down, backwards, and change. And it's part mm-hmm. of how I ended up in special operations.
Correct.
Sort of non-conventional program things. But in there, like in the pandemic, this thing occurs and it changes a dynamic. And you know, around the world, suddenly people were not seeing. And I really like the phrase that you use of, you know, tending to the flock. Because the flock's response to the shepherd, I think, is a leadership
Correct.
Aspect. The flock turns towards them. The flock can be cajoled in other ways, mm-hmm. right? But really they turn towards the shepherd because there's a notion of safety and engagement. So that during the pandemic, you know, many millions of humans and beings, maybe hundreds of millions, were hurt by isolation and damage to their social experience and social skills. So I think of even just of teaching online and that I'm kind of what we're doing now to transmit human to human emotional connection is more difficult in this fashion because we're not beside each other. So this challenge of how do you do it? I think that leaders have to be more engaged, knowing that, you know, as an example, if I merely click a button, I go away from the screen and I could be nowhere, but pretend I'm listening. So in education context, in meeting context, we've had to expend more energy, but businesses also need to be efficient to maintain profit margins and these other things. So then you might collapse your energy, which now people aren't getting nurtured.
Correct.
And maybe fed by a leadership feeling at the same time. So big challenge for all companies, for all entities in the world, and for the individual human beings inside it.
Wonderful. Thank you. Steve, you also were speaking about you being a humanist and the organization is fostering traditional excellence, human performance. My question is, how can a leader foster a culture of innovation and creativity within an organization?
Yeah, well, this is the center of my doctoral work and about halfway through with Arizona State. And from my research over the last 2 years, I think I would sum it up to consider a gateway. And when the gateway is open, then innovation, and because I would relate innovation to change, learning, and growth. So with a human-to-human trust connection, the gateway can open. But without trust, the gateway might snap closed. As an example, it's kind of like to me, if you're practicing yoga and you're trying to relax, you cannot try harder to relax. If someone yells at you to start relaxing right now, as we might sometimes consider in a military, raising our voice to inspire movement, the same way if you were my boss and you yelled at me and said, well, you better start being innovative right now, or you are fired, you're done. Well, that would tend to snap shut any ability I had to be creative, innovative. It might close learning and create the opposite effect. So it's like to me, it's like this delicate thing, this delicate existence that you're trying to create. And one of the challenges, again, I mentioned the how to objectify a subjective feeling that is inside of me when you're talking to me or vice versa. But I do believe that leadership has a very powerful role in creating a feeling of comfort. And we might call it a psychological safety right in there, but there are other components so that the person that you are trying to gain creativity and innovation from or with feels comfortable in making, sharing ideas that could be incorrect, that you might not agree with, that might not be what you did yesterday. And I think that's the real challenge of organizations as they try to innovate, is that it necessarily means at some point leaving what you did yesterday. So a company that's been around for 50 years and is a billion dollar entity, for them to change, it would be very difficult because they could unravel their success or they could ensure it. Right. It's like changing the course of a stream. It's going to fight to get back to its original direction, because that's what it's always done.
Amazing. Thank you. My next question to you, Steve, is on culture. You know, you live in a very, very culturally diverse country, and yet you come from the army where, you know, hierarchy is very critical. Culturally, we are very different. Organizations are different. We come from different families, different backgrounds. I wanted to ask you, how does culture impact leadership?
Yeah, I think that culture and leadership interact at the most basic level all the way through to the biggest level. So that, because if leadership to me is the human-to-human subjective feeling of a trust relationship, those would be unique, not just by people, but cultures tend to define common behaviors, more common thoughts, things that, you know, I'm working with another group in Western Kenya. So their common thought is not always the same as mine. The other morning when we were having a Zoom discussion, it was about minus 27 degrees centigrade here, and we were getting 2 feet of snow. So a common experience for me was not common for them. Correct. And if a leader doesn't pay attention, you could miss out. Absolutely. You could miss out on something. I'll give a small example of one of my experiences as a military officer. I was on exchange with the British Army, the British Parachute Regiment, and we were, by coincidence, in Norway. And in Norway, I had a troop of Gurkha engineers attached. Fine, you know, exceptional soldiers, a different language, a different culture. And I had a soldier was sent over to see if I wanted a coffee. And I didn't drink coffee at the time. I said, no, thank you. Turned away because I was busy. And I look back and he had a look on his face because he was there to help me out.
Help you.
And I thought I was just being matter of fact, but I think in a way, like I hurt his feelings. So then he said, well, how about a tea? And I said, no, thank you. Because I was busy and I was doing it. And I looked back and he was still there. And finally, my sergeant major said, you know, sir, he wants to get you something. So I said, well, how about a hot chocolate? And he said, yes, hot chocolate. And he ran and came back. And I thought, it never occurred to me, because I was busy and doing, it never occurred to me that in his role, and in fact, part of his culture, the more I work with the Gurkhas, part of his culture is duty and service, right? And I thought I was doing duty and service, but I missed something that he was trying to tell me that everyone in his group knew. And I find it fascinating. And I encounter lots of folks, and I value diversity because it floats my boat. Like different people interest me.
Correct.
But then I always have to accept that at some point I'm going to be wrong. Because my world and the way I view the world is not going to be the same. And I'm going to do something that could embarrass me. It could offend someone. And I've said sorry, excuse me, a lot of my life because I merely didn't understand. But I think even there, a commander is paid to know and direct, and that is the way it is. And that's very powerful and useful, especially when people are under stress. But I think a leader understands at all times that they can be wrong and might not understand why. They could be the one that's wrong. That's the reason they're not being a great leader is they don't understand what someone else is trying to tell them. But I think until you understand that, like accept that, then you're missing an opportunity to be an even better leader.
Amazing. Wonderful. So, Steve, I have time for two more questions.
Thank you.
My next question is that there are certain beliefs people hold about leaders. And I wanted to ask you that, can a strong leader show vulnerability?
I believe that to be a leader, you must show vulnerability. Mm-hmm. A commander is different. A commander can seldom, if ever, show vulnerability because mm-hmm. its command is objective and it's 100%. As we've been discussing, leadership, I think, has to show the vulnerability mm-hmm. in saying, I'm sorry. I hope I didn't offend you. I didn't understand what you were trying to tell me. Now I better mm-hmm. understand. Like, you know something right. that I don't.
Hmm.
And that creates a very powerful connection beyond what is coercive with command.
Hmm.
So that, and again, in a military, to deal with people who are in life and death stress, command is sometimes very useful. And it's strictly hierarchical.
Correct.
And it's not invisible. It's apparent to everyone by the accoutrements on their uniform.
Absolutely.
And what you call people.
Hmm.
But to transfer over to the leader component, I think it's this piece of, I can be wrong and you can see it. If you enable yourself as a leader, you know that people know you're flawed. That's the special nature of when they come towards you. And you also accept that, I think that at any given time, anyone in a group can be a leader according to the requirements of the group.
Correct.
So if we were somewhere and I'd never been there and you have a different experience, maybe you need to lead and I could still be the boss, or you could be the boss and you could say, Steve, we're in Kingston. Where do you think we should go? Or what do you think we should do? And I would say, well, that's a great question. But if I was engaged with you, you have a different spectrum, a different experience. And maybe that's where, even as a boss or as a different leader, I need to hand over to you, like to hand an aspect over, and to, because you have to trust someone to do that.
Fantastic.
So, great question, bad answer, yeah. But
no. I think it's a great response. I think it's a great response. Thank you. And my last question to you, Stephen, this is for the thousands of people who will listen to our conversation. Based on your amazing journey in the Army, everything that you're doing out of the Army on leadership, what would you say are three lessons you would want a lot of our young viewers and listeners to take away from your journey and from our conversation?
So I suspect I would start with practice, observe, be prepared to make mistakes and apologize and grow and learn. If you're very lucky, find a mentor or a set of mentors that can help develop you. I might suggest from special operations, it's all about the people, and that would be my way because of my personality. And the idea that leadership is a powerful force. It's not necessarily good or bad. So many people write or talk about, good leadership. Well, leadership is powerful. How you use it and how you implement, the same way science is powerful. Money is powerful.
Yeah,
power is indeed powerful. That's why it's called power.
Yeah.
But how you use it is the thing to me. Develop and use your leadership to enable others, to guide others, to develop, to help. Rather than use leadership, because leadership can be used in terrible ways as well,
Correct.
Influence to do purposeful, willful harm.
Correct.
So I think I might end with those ideas.
Wonderful. And on that note, Steve, and your amazing lessons, and I love what you said so easily, practice, observe, make mistakes, apologize, get a mentor, very, very powerful words. And each one of them are so easily actionable. And the second one you said was leadership is very powerful. How you use it is important, and make sure that whatever we do, we should enable others. Thank you so much for speaking to me about your incredible journey in the Army. Thank you for talking to me about leadership. I love your example of the Gurkhas and how sometimes culture plays a very important role in really being able to understand one another. Thank you also for speaking to me about all the work that you have been doing with different organizations and about leadership in general. Thank you again and good luck.
Well, thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.